Hello and welcome to the Conspiracy Hour. This week we are going to talk about the life and times of Gordon Novell, super spy, private investigator, a man from the shadow world, a tribute to a cold warrior, Gordon Novell, 1938 to 2012. 3 o'clock in the morning in a nursing home in Los Angeles, Gordon Novell left this world. Behind, he left a series of mysteries. Was he involved in the JFK assassination or not? Did he work for the CIA or did he not? One thing is for sure, Gordon Novell was flamboyant. And Gordon Novell knew how to promote Gordon Novell. Over the years, we became very close friends with Gordon. I could see through the crusty, rough exterior into a man who was interested in human rights, a man who believed that he could make a difference in the world, and dedicated his final years to the pursuit of free or cheap energy. He thought that energy would be coming from the UFO. Back engineering, he was convinced, had been done. And now this energy was sequestered by a conglomerate of oil company interests to keep it off the market. Gordon Novell was quite a private eye. He worked with us on several cases. His most illustrious client, I guess, was Ramsey Clark, the former Attorney General of the United States under the Carter administration. Gordon Novell will be cremated and then laid to rest beside his mother at a cemetery in Florida. Gordon Novell, a career and a life that is no more. To private investigator extraordinaire, Gordon Novell, may you rest in peace.
Questions and prospects, with prospects really of a few answers, is the best way I could sum up our tribute here to Gordon Novell today. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our show. I guess that would be the headline, if we had a headline for today's show. We're talking about Gordon Novell and his passing. We have quite a bit of information about it on our website at jerrypippin.com. And you can simply go over there and click on the links. There's a couple of links on the highlights window there on the homepage. The death of Gordon was not unexpected. He had been very ill. And it's still, you know, you're never ready for it. It came as a shock. He was 74 years old. Novell was still behaving like a cold warrior. And evidently, he had been that part of his life, earlier in his life at least. Been lots of hot spots around the world that Gordon's been involved in, the Bay of Pigs, the JFK assassination, being held by radicals in a Beirut jail while he was over there trying to free an American hostage. Those are just a few of the scrapes that Gordon Novell, private investigator, had endured over his life. I did not know Gordon early in his life, but even in his 60s when I first met him, he was full of vim and vigor, as we say here in Oklahoma. In an earlier interview, which is now part of our tribute to Novell, broadcast just a day after his death, Gordon discussed some of the events in his life. And a lot of it was interesting, and a lot of it was almost like out of a spy novel. But that's the way Gordon Novell lived his life. When we had an off-the-record conversation with him over the years, and we had many, we were aware that there was much more to tell. However, the Grim Reaper came for Gordon in the middle of the night in a nursing home in Los Angeles, California, taking him and his stories to the other side. Gordon was a son of the South. He loved New Orleans and Louisiana in particular, and never really left it in spirit, even though he lived on the West Coast for much of his life. He loved hanging out in Hollywood with the Hollywood crowd for many years. He was born in a show business heritage, and we're going to talk to his son, Sir Novell, about that in a little bit to find exactly what is happening there. You might be surprised about what is happening there. And Gordon spent his early years at the Pasadena Playhouse, training for the big movie career that never happened. He was one step ahead of me. I always wanted to go to the Pasadena Playhouse. Later in my life, a little older than when Gordon was at Pasadena Playhouse, I spent a little time in Hollywood, knocking on doors, talking to producers, doing a little bit of show business, but not much. I had a love too much for broadcasting, and I think Gordon probably had a love too much for excitement in the black ops world to really pursue that career the way he wanted. He told me in an interview one time he really wanted to be a director or a producer or a writer, and he was kind of all of that in a way. He's had many projects over his life. Life turned out to be a real-life incarnation of your favorite spy thriller, combined with a little bit of the cheap two-bit world of the PI stories that we read in Pulp Fiction. And for those who knew him up close and personal, he was a man of great social conscience that in his later years he dedicated to his pursuit of free or cheap energy, which he was convinced the U.S. government had back-engineered from UFO crashes. And he laid out a pretty good record of evidence that, at least circumstantially, he was probably right. Many have asked me if foul play was involved. It most certainly could have been a murder, but there's little evidence of that. However, if there is a suspect, it's more likely, in my opinion, to have been from the energy corporations of America and around the world rather than the government. As Gordon was evidently getting very close to the development of free energy, which he envisioned that would be something that would be good for mankind, free the world from the debt of big oil and gas. Others suspect his life was long dedicated to black operations, and maybe we didn't really know all of the facts about Gordon Novell. He did have friendship with CIA agents, and he talked about it frequently to me off the record, as I say. He loved the shadow clandestine operations of the world, and it is true that sometimes these type of people do bite the hand that feeds them when they no longer find them useful. So we can't rule out anything, but I'm inclined to think it was a natural occurrence. And we'll find out more about that as time goes along. Many of those factors could have been involved, but I think it was Gordon's lifestyle. He did live to 74. And he did love hard living, wild women, and various stressful close encounters with law enforcement, military types, and the underworld even. He knew most of them. He knew many of them by their first name. And it could have taken a toll, as that is stressful, even though I know he enjoyed it every minute with every fiber of his body. His body probably had nothing more to give, even though his spirit and drive was that of a young man. In my last conversation with him, it was almost like Gordon Novell was 30 again. Many of the people on my staff over the years never could understand the association I have with Bad Boy Gordon, and I say that affectionately. But once you got past that PI image, there was a small boy-like quality about him that included thinking the best of mankind, something I could identify with. And he knew the people that he knew were dealing with not necessarily always the same intentions he had. Some of them were, frankly, rotten to the core. But even as Gordon and I laughed about that many times talking about things, the magnitude of their devotion could not be questioned. Many of these black operators are very dedicated to God and country. Gordon Novell was called many names, but as Robert Morningstar dubbed him in an expose on the British Petroleum encounter in the Gulf, where they pretty much screwed up the environment forever, called him Noble Dragon. I believe Gordon liked that term, Noble Dragon. As all of us know far too well, life on this planet for humans, it's temporary. And it was time for Gordon to move on. It leaves one to wonder if there's any eternity for men's souls. And if there is, then you wonder about what Gordon's doing right now. He's probably already shaking up the realm of those on the other side. Gordon, almost until the day he died, kept in touch with certain people in high positions of power. And I'm not talking about just in the United States, but around the world. He knew many people, the players, the black operatives, intelligence agents, male and female. Gordon used to talk to me off the record about his protector at CIA, who later left that agency for other places to work in the intelligence field because of a moral conviction. I'm talking about Ronald Pandolfi. Pandolfi is somewhat of a mystery man, but we do know some things about him. For instance, reliable information to me suggests that he left the CIA over the questions of WMDs in Iraq. Pandolfi did a finding for the Bush administration early on about the war in Iraq. Before they went to war, he was asked to find out whether or not they had WMDs. We're talking about weapons of mass destruction. And evidently, Pandolfi and his group at the CIA found that Saddam Hussein did not control any WMDs. The Bush administration evidently wasted no time saying that was not the finding they wanted. And rather than compromise its standards, Pandolfi asked to be transferred to another department away from the CIA. But still, he's involved today in highly technical gathering of intelligence and respected by many men in the intelligence world. We asked Pandolfi to come to the show tonight live, but he instead decided just to send me a statement to read. In this statement, which as Grant Cameron pointed out to me, as I showed it to him, since Grant had been investigating the shadowy world for some time, is obviously some sort of coded message. So therefore, I will read it as written, and as Pandolfi submitted it to the Jerry Pippin Show. In respect to secret agents, Pandolfi paying tribute to another man in the shadow world of the secret operations, Gordon Novell. Let me read this verbatim, what Pandolfi wrote for me to read on the Jerry Pippin Show tonight. It came in an email close to midnight, October 6th, 2012. He starts off, he says, I met Gordon at an offbeat place at night where people might meet to have a private conversation and perhaps where only one might walk away. But I had known of Gordon for many years. Well, at least I knew of the shadowy figure that might have been Gordon. We did walk away that night into the shadows at different times and in different directions, but somewhat in step with the shared vision of accessing the truth and making the world a better place. Gordon's path thereafter was a tangled web with many falls, and there were times when I received or made a call. He loved and respected the princess and served as godfather to Kashmir. He climbed up the mountains, spoke with the wise yak, and butted heads with the blue goat. Gordon was always ready for a fight, ready to win that fight with confidence. He was confident that he was always right. My confidence in a better world, inspired by Gordon during the night, that now, in the shadows, there are more of us meeting tonight. This message came to me over the weekend, as you know, and that was it. But somewhere, somehow, I think in that coded message, we can imagine a meeting of some, for lack of better terms, Cold War spies, someplace in Washington, D.C. in the Beltway area, some of them Gordon's friends, some of them Gordon's associates, and they held their own funeral of sorts for Gordon. What an interesting meeting that must have been, I imagine. If only we could have heard the tributes and the comments, I'm sure they would have been very, very revealing. By the way, the wise yak and the blue goat, obviously decision makers of the highest order, either in the ranks of the CIA, DIA, or perhaps even at the gates, at the heads of state. In this country and elsewhere, the reference to the princess, Mrs. Pandorfi, and Gordon, and the grandfather to their son, were also included. A personal salute tonight of the highest order to Gordon Novell. Now it's my pleasure to bring on the line from Thailand, Sir Novell, Gordon's son, and we're going to talk a little bit about Gordon Novell. So first of all, Sir Novell, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for, it's a very warm introduction. You know, I appreciate it. It's emotional. So, you know, it's going to be tough for me not to get a little emotional in here as well. But, that's what happens when you have a family that passed, you know. So,
that's right. I get a little more emotional than I thought I would. I thought I was a big boy. But
yeah, it's not so easy, and it's good to cry, you know. There's no difference in men and women. You can cry. I was looking at your show and, you know, what you guys have done for him in the past and the videos and things, and it makes it easier when your family dies and you see that other people, you know, cared a lot. And so it's going to be a little tough for me to, you know, talk about his stuff, but once we get into the show and stuff, I'll push through it a little bit. But anyway, so... yeah, we're all, a little sad about his passing and things, and we'd all like to have him around for a while longer. I think the one thing, you know, everybody said about him was, they really were entertained by him, you know, and they liked to be around him, to listen to him talk, you know. And you guys recorded a lot of that, and you guys put a lot of that on video. And so I want to say I appreciate that from our family.
Now, did he go over to Thailand to see you recently?
Yeah, he was when he got older, he wasn't so financially secure, and he had a lot of friends help him, you know. And it wasn't because people didn't help him; it was because of his lifestyle and how he grew up and things. And you know, you can make excuses for everybody, too, and, he wasn't totally responsible, that's for sure. but he was a good guy. You know, at the end of the day, I think most people say that. And, you know, he had some, I think he had a bad start in life and, you know, went down a lot of wrong paths, but I think he got back on the right path. And he liked to, you know, he liked to antagonize people and, you know, cause things to happen. You know, he wasn't the type of guy that wanted to sit around and lay in a bed in the hospital or anything like that, you know. So, you know, his health was bad when he kind of pushed out of here. And, you know, there's a lot of people keeping tabs on him before he went. He wasn't alone or anything. I was calling him regularly in the hospital. And also he had one friend named Bill Amos that, you know, looked out for him quite well. And he had a very nice girlfriend named Nora. And there's several other people, Mike Bigham and Bob Shaheen and Tom Sullivan, and there's Steve Huntsman and many people that like helped him, you know, over the years. That's just a few, and you know, there's many more before that, and he has many old friends, and I'm gonna you know, contact them and whatnot as well, because I know everybody doesn't know. You know, it just happened a few days ago. So anyways, he did pass away. He had bad, you know, he had a heart attack a few years ago, and he also had diabetes very bad, and he had a problem with his foot, and he had his toe amputated recently, and we knew it was going to be a tough fight because it was a serious bacteria, and he also had other health problems, you know, but we all knew he was kind of like Wolverine, and that he was, you know, kind of tough, and that he, you know, would recover, and he did. He did for a while, but I don't think he wanted to lay in the hospital, you know, for too long. And he was in a lot of pain. I read some of his emails and stuff, but that happens when you die. You know, that's what happens. So he definitely, you know, recovered from his surgery and was able to talk. And, you know, many people spoke to him, and everybody got to say what they wanted to say to him if they wanted to, you know, if they really wanted a chance to get a hold of him. And you guys did a great job. Like I said, I'm very impressed with your recordings and, you know, that stuff that we couldn't do from our family. Go ahead.
Have you made a memorial arrangements, or has that already happened? Or?
Yeah, well, that's what I'll tell you a little bit. You know, we're going to have his DNA profile made just because we have some litigation going on with his, you know, his past family history. And, you know, with his father. So there's a couple lawsuits pending in his name in New York. And I can talk about those later. But for his, we're going to have an autopsy done as well for medical reasons. We want to, you know, the family history, what the, you know, specific cause of death is. And, you know, you can kind of prevent it, those kind of things, you know, if you're younger. So, you know, genetics plays a part of that. And, you know, then we're going to, he wanted to be cremated, you know, and so we're going to, you know, make sure that he's properly taken care of and everything. And then we're going to have, we were talking about holding a memorial in L.A. for him. We wanted to give his friends and people who helped him in the past a chance to, you know, do whatever they felt they wanted to do. And I'm going to send an email out to, you know, all the people that he was very close with or, you know, emailed a lot with, and ask them what they, you know, whether they want to show up and whatnot. Or if they don't, you know, he had a lot of friends spread out across the country and, you know, the world. So all his friends weren't in L.A. But there's a group of people there that loved him and, you know, will probably want to show up, at least a little local group. So we'll do something small, or if, you know, several people want to come out. You know, a lot of people loved him, but, you know, life is, everybody's busy and, you know, everybody's old that know him too. You know, a lot of his friends are old too, so it's not easy to travel and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not expected from our side, you know. We just want to do something right, and, you know, a lot of people will do a lot of stuff with him online, so.
Yeah. Do you mind telling me a little bit about the lawsuit against Billy Rose or the estate or whatever is going on there? I mean, was that, you know, I've always heard that was his father. Was that true?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what we found. I found that out in 2011, and my mom had sent me an email just randomly and said, "Hey, sir, check this out on this TV show on NBC. It's called The Playboy Club, and your grandfather's on there." And I looked at the video link on, you know, NBC, and there's some little guy on there named Billy Rose that ran bars and, you know, looked Jewish and sounded like he had a New York accent. And I said, you know, but it was based in Chicago, and it was kind of a fictional story, and it ended up failing the series. I guess it wasn't so great. And I went in. I said, "Mom, what is that all about? You know, who's this guy?" And so I went and, you know, Googled his name for the first time in 2011. You know, we knew we had some grandfather back there, but we didn't know who it was, and we knew that he left some money to Israel. You know, that's all we were told, and, you know, that was pretty much it, you know. And we grew up in Ohio, you know, in a small town and things, so it wasn't the best place, you know, to be anything other than white and Christian and things like that. So not that that's a bad thing either, you know. It's just that's how certain neighborhoods are in small towns, you know, and they like who they are, you know, and that's okay too. So, you know, we grew up not knowing anything about that pretty much, and until 2011 I Googled him and seen his Billy Rose's photos when he's in his 30s, and it was very shocking to me because his face looked very similar to mine, and, you know, I always had this feeling in the back of my mind that there was, you know, something more, I don't know why, just some, I don't know what you call it, deja vu or whatever, but anyways. So I looked at it, and then I'm like, yeah, that's my grandfather for sure. And then I started digging into the legal history of it and asked my dad and my mom their stories. And they told me, you know, Billy Rose was pretty powerful. He was like Donald Trump back in, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s. And, you know, he died in the 60s, you know, in the 1960s. And he was, you know, died with $54 million. And, you know, my dad, I guess, was his only child. And, you know, he came of, you know, Billy Rose loved, you know, bars and women and stuff and ran with the New York Mafia and J. Edgar Hoover. And he was a pretty sophisticated business guy. And, you know, he had a really, you know, he was married and was also having an affair with another famous lady. And his wife was also a famous actress when my dad was born. So Billy Rose had a lot at stake. You know, you can understand why people have, you know, make decisions like that.
That probably explains Gordon's fascination with show business all his life. It was in his genes.
Big shoes to fill. He had big shoes to fill, and, you know, he always wanted to, he had a mystery to solve from his birth. You know, he had a very big mystery to solve, and, you know, he got close to it, but, you know, in the 60s, you couldn't prove those kind of things. There's a lot of discrimination against children born out of wedlock legally, similar to African Americans and women. So, you know, it was just you look at everybody and their selfish pursuits, and you can kind of see how it happened. You know, everybody kind of acts in their own interest. You know, some people act in, you know, and to help other people, you know, but, you know, most of the time we, you know, to do what benefits us. And that's what happened, and you had it to the extreme in the case of his family. So he grew up without a father. Only a mother that was, you know, young and scared and was pretty much just a dancer at one of Billy Rose's bars. And, you know, she's an okay person too, but she, you know, she was traumatized by it because of the discrimination against, you know, children born out of wedlock and not being married in the southern United States in the 1930s and things like that. So, you know, he grew up without a father, and, you know, there was a father there that could have been there, you know, but due to kind of cultural and social circumstances, it just didn't happen. And by, you know, and also his father was a very extreme and, you know, extreme personality, you know, genius but evil and, you know, very connected as well, you know. So he had big shoes to fill, and I think he was always trying to do that by making billions of dollars and things like that. And he could never just, you know, stride along and take it easy, you know. He always had those shoes to fill, and even up until his death. And We filed a couple lawsuits to try and get his estate back, and you know, his father's estate back, and also his father's DNA sample, and those are in litigation now. And maybe we win, and maybe we don't win. But, you know, he got to read those before he died, and I'm happy about that.
And we need to make certain everybody knows, sir, that you're an attorney of some renown, and you practice now basically and live in the Pacific Rim, but you practice all over the world, I guess.
Yes, I have a good immigration practice, U.S. immigration. You know, even people, you know, hate the U.S. around the world or things, but a lot of people still love it too, you know, and you know, there's a line of people to get in the door, so. That's why the U.S. is kind of crazy, too, because it's a very high demand. It's the highest demand immigration system, and I kind of seen that coming, you know, after I graduated law school, and I was interested in Asia, and I could see that, you know, I've been playing Asian war games and video games since I was a kid and always was fascinated by China and Japan and, you know, Indonesia, South, you know, Indochina area. So I ended up over here, you know, as a practicing as attorney for Deloitte Touche for 4 years, and you know, more as a consultant. We don't do real legal practice here, you know, not in the courts like that. I didn't want to do that stuff. I don't like litigation and domestic, you know, bankruptcies, divorces, things like that. It's too much drama.
Yeah, right.
I like stable.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about your dad's connection to UFOs. That's how I met him originally.
Sure.
What do you know about your dad and UFOs?
Do you want to hear my take on, you know, what he knew and, you know, what, you know, just as, you know, just to be blunt, he always liked to use that word, I'll be blunt with you, and he didn't like to pull punches and things like that. So, you know, I'll tell you what I know about that kind of stuff and what my, you know, thoughts are. They differ from his, you know, I think, you know, just because of where he was born and, you know, the time and place grew up and, you know, the difference in, you know, technologies and things like that. So, you know, he loved UFOs. You know, he's been fascinated by them for decades. So, you know, before other people were fascinated in them, he was fascinated in them. It's he also was, you know, trying to build the iPhone 20 years ago too. You know, he just could never get the financing, and you know, also there's a lot.
He's quite a technical guy. The first time I met him, he was wired. I mean, he had one of those. He had something in his earplug, and he was always doing two or three things at the same time and seemed to be able to handle it pretty well. And most of the things he was talking about were connected to UFOs and energy. But did he ever have a UFO experience, you think, himself, or he just was fascinated by it?
I think he was fascinated by him. Again, Dad's story is he grew up, you know, with a mystery, like, who's your father? So he had to solve that, you know. And, you know, and he was, and I think that's kind of why he became an investigator, because that's what he was naturally good at as a, you know, out of his childhood.
Let's talk a little bit about Gordon and the CIA. What do you know about that?
Basically with the CIA, his main connection there is the guy you already mentioned with the, you know, with the monologue that you read.
Yeah, Von Dorothy, right.
He's a very nice guy. You know, I've talked with him, you know, not met him or anything. He's kind of like Charlie's Angels or something, but he's a nice guy, and he loved my dad, you know. And basically, you know, my dad, I don't think, was so, you know, working on the payroll of the CIA or anything like that. But, you know, he knew Ron, and Ron was connected to him, whether it's, you know, as a friend or, you know, a lot more. So that's the truth about Ron and my dad. I know Ron, you know, cared for my dad.
Yes, that's true. And I think in that coded message he gave, it came through even that he cared very much for your dad.
He has a way with words. You know, he writes differently than everybody else I've talked to. Ron's a little bit special, you could tell, with his writing style.
Yeah, I understand. And Gordon knew all those guys, Kit Green, and I don't know about Jack Safradi and him. They seem to have a love-hate relationship. But they always managed to send me pictures of them out having an expensive dinner with lots of people around.
That's for sure. You know, I think Dad was kind of one of the gurus of, you know, UFOs and stuff on the internet. And as far, you know, there's a lot of people that want to be that guy, you know, because it's a great mystery.